You're listening to another great podcast in the MyMac Podcasting Network.
It's time for the Geeks Pub. I'm Tim Robertson, joined by David Cohen. Hello, David.
Hello. I realize we're in the pub and I haven't got a drink.
Oh, I do. It's called coffee and water.
Not really a traditional pub drink. I've been really tempted to get one of those, you know, the things that's like a mini keg, refrigerates the beer, and has a tap on the front. Really tempted, but I don't know why. I don't drink a lot of beer, but...
I don't drink any beer. I've never acquired the taste.
No?
No. Just one of those things that it's like, eh. Every single time I've tried it, I'm like, ugh.
That's probably because you've only ever drunk crappy beers. There's a lot of crappy beer out there. But
no, I've tried really good stuff, according to people who drink beer. They're like, oh, because they'll hear the story of me, I don't like beer, and they're like, oh, well, you got to try this beer, and they'll bring me that beer, and I try it, and it all tastes like swamp water to me.
Well, it's definitely like, I mean, it's like when you grow up, when you first drink coffee. It's the first time you drink coffee, you think, my God, why would anybody drink this? It's disgusting. But then you kind of get the taste for it, and beer is a little bit the same.
Not really, because coffee, whether you like it or not, smells really good when it's brewing. Even people that don't like coffee is like, well, that smells good, I just don't like the taste.
Yeah.
Beer smells like piss. It smells awful.
That's because most of the beer that people drink is piss. It's cheap, alcoholed water, which is where beer came from. People used to drink beer because the water wasn't safe to drink. But if you made it into beer, that made it safe to drink.
Correct.
But you know, the kind of canned beer that most people drink nowadays is just garbage. It really is. I mean, it's watered down, mass-produced garbage. But there are nice beers out there.
Mm.
You know, but just I don't drink a lot of it.
No, I think it's the hops.
Fine. Yeah. There are plenty of non-hoppy beers as well. But
yeah, I don't know. There's something about it. I never got the taste for it.
Well, considering how many people abuse beer, it's probably a good thing.
Yeah, oh, well, you know. We were grocery shopping, and Julie had seen this at another store. Same store, but same chain, just a different physical store. And it's on an end cap, and it's these tiny little bottles. You could wrap your hand around them, and they're 99 cents each, and they're these tiny little liquors, right?
Right.
So we spend about $10. We each get 5 different ones to try, and they have different flavors. And so last night we decided we're going to try watermelon, and you know, this is the first time we've tried any of them.
This is a watermelon spirit.
Yes.
Right, and what's the base spirit?
I have no idea.
Are they, or maybe they have just literally taken grain alcohol and added watermelon and water to it.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
And we didn't realize that the 99 on there was the proof.
Right.
So we both take a swig and holy crap. I wasn't stuffed up last night.
And I find myself thinking that the moral quandary of selling little kid-sized bottles of spirits for 99 cents... Or were they not 99 cents?
No, they were 99 cents.
They were 99. To me, this seems morally wrong on very many levels.
Well, it's designed to try them, but I could see your argument that this is very appealing to kids.
Exactly. And then when you actually drink it, you find that it's real fire water, that it's not even, you know, an Alco Pop or anything like that. It's you blow your head off. Oh, well,
we both agreed that we would need to put it in Sprite or something like that. Because, wow, I mean, when you smelled it, it really did smell like watermelon. So I was excited. And then I took a drink and, we ended up putting ice in it.
On a related but considerably tangential note, yesterday I tried the new Coke Zero with Oreo flavoring.
Any good?
Well, I'll be fair. It both smells like Oreo, and the aftertaste is most definitely Oreo. I mean, they've definitely nailed the flavor. So you swig it, you open it, and it does smell like Oreos, and then you drink it, and it tastes like a very rich, sweet cola, and then you get this huge aftertaste of the kind of the vanilla from the Oreos.
Huh.
I've got to be honest. It's a weird combination. You kind of wonder who came up with it and why.
But because they make Oreo stuff at everything now. It's weird. Yeah.
But it wasn't, I wouldn't say it was awful. I wouldn't say I hated it, but I'm not sure I'd go as far as saying I liked it either.
So you wouldn't, you wouldn't pick up another one?
Well, that's the thing. I might well do, but it's, I mean, you won't buy a six pack of it, put it that way. It's really odd. Really, really odd.
There we go. I just realized I hadn't turned off my ceiling fan.
Okay.
And it, every now and then you'll start hearing it. I don't drink cola anymore at all, so.
Right.
Yeah, anyways. Yeah, it's everywhere. It's these companies are just trying to throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks. Hey, let's, and right now it seems like Oreo is the thing that they're trying with everything. A couple years ago, it was the hot stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, what can we make spicy and hot? Before that, it was bacon. Remember, at one point, everything was bacon. Cream cheese bacon. No, stop it.
Well, so the bacon was very much a US thing. That didn't happen anywhere else.
Well, you didn't miss anything.
But it, you know, but the thing is, thanks to globalization, I was able to buy. I'd read an American friend talking about Coca-Cola Oreo, and I made a Hydrox Pepsi joke, saying that they should probably get in because both the taste of Pepsi and Hydrox are better than Oreo and cola, Coca-Cola. I was mildly surprised to find it on sale here in the UK.
I wouldn't think that it would be there.
No, but you see a lot. There's a lot more stores here that sell American candy now. Obviously, at hugely inflated prices.
Sure.
So it is a thing that people like, you know, so they like to eat Nerds and Jolly Ranchers and all the stuff that you normally wouldn't buy here. And we did have the hot thing a couple of years ago as well. I find it interesting. The only thing that's put a pause on the hot thing is they finally managed to manufacture a product that was so hot it killed people.
Yes. Yeah, they had to stop selling it. They're like, okay, people are dying from heart attacks from this.
Yeah. Maybe we should back off a little.
So my understanding is that I don't like hot stuff at all. If it's got a very mild jalapeno flavor, it's just a little warm, that's fine. Yeah. But beyond that, I don't like hot stuff. And I've never liked hot stuff, but even less so now that I'm in my 50s, right?
Yeah.
So my understanding is the reason people like hot stuff and the reason it's called hot and you get a burning feeling is because your brain interprets that as heat and burning, it's bad for you and your body doesn't like it, except to counter it, your body releases endorphins, which you do like. And the reason people like hot stuff is because of the endorphins rush you get from eating something that's hot.
Yeah, there's that. It does actually, I mean, the reason that many Asian countries where it's very hot often eat spicy food is because it cools you down. It makes you perspire, which makes you feel cooler if the temperature is very hot.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that as well. But let's face it, when they're adding huge amounts of chili pepper and capsaicin, which is the chemical that causes that reaction you were talking about, to stuff to make it hotter and hotter and everywhere than anything, that's not because people love the taste. It's because everyone, you know, likes to do the, you know, the in the same way that people like AR-15s over hunting rifles. It's like, it's better, it's harder, it's hotter. Yeah, and it's basically a big dick waving exercise.
Yeah, except for the challenges were pretty funny.
Yeah, the people who eat in the California
my favorite was, well, it was the one chip challenge is the thing that really kind of made the news.
Well, yeah, but the eating the actual peppers thing was a thing years ago before the one chip challenge started.
Yes.
TikTok started the one chip challchallenge.
Yeah, but the chips are actually hotter than the...
Well, yeah, because obviously
they would combine different stuff.
Yeah, they've gone through a factory, and we all know how great factories are at making stuff crappier for you.
The two that I always really enjoyed, there's this one, I think it's in Atlanta, it's a news broadcast, and it's a black lady and a white guy, and he's very white, right? Mm. And they try it, and it's a little warm for her, you can tell, it's hot. But she grew up, she said, eating hot stuff. And you could tell he's very competitive and kind of arrogant. And he does not do well. His whole face is turning red. His eyes turn red. And he's actually getting angry at her because he wants to win. And it's clearly in massive distress, and it's right. pretty funny. But my favorite one is this dad. He's a black guy, and he's saying, well, you know, my African descent means, you know, I'm used to eating hot stuff, and this ain't going to do anything to me. And, oh, my God, he's bald. And the top of his, within 2 minutes, the top of his yeah. head is just pouring sweat. And he is so in distress. You're not supposed to laugh at it, but that's kind of the point, is to yeah. point the finger and laugh when someone's doing something stupid like that.
The one I always enjoyed, there was these two teenage girls. This one was a few years back, and they ate, I think it was a California Reaper, but maybe it was, what's the one before the Reaper?
Oh, is this the one they start crying?
They start crying, yeah. and then they start panicking,
yeah.
and then one of them gets carted away in an ambulance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're very, again, it's the same thing. They're very, very white. They're in like this white wood-boarded house that looks very kind of upmarket. And you just think, here's two girls who are way out of their depth and have no idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very, very funny.
I've seen that one. Yeah. They're literally crying. Ah. The mom comes in. The mom's ticked
what
off.
What have you done? Yeah.
Yeah. Mad at the yeah. brother or something, like it was his fault. Oh, God, that was funny.
But, I many years ago, Leanne and I took a cruise to Mexico, or to the Caribbean anyway, and we took one of those day trips to go and see the Incan ruins.
Yeah.
And we get on this tour bus, and obviously this Mexican guide, and he talk like this. You know, you expect him to have a poncho and a sombrero on, you know, and have a six-shooter strapped to his waist. He talk like this, and he's talking like this into the microphone on the bus. And he goes, who like? He says, in Mexico. He goes, in Mexico we like the chili. He said, who like the chili? And half the bus put their hand up. He goes, who like the jalapeno chili? Hands go down. There's a few left. And then he goes, in Mexico we give the jalapeno chili to our babies to get them used to chili.
Oh, wow.
It was funny.
Well, we've got a few things to talk about. I don't remember if we talked about this on the last episode or not, but Star Wars has canceled The Acolyte. Did we talk about that? It seems like we did, but I don't remember.
I think we briefly mentioned it.
I think we talked about that the show ended and we were kind of trashing it.
Yep.
But I don't think they had officially canceled season two at that point.
It's not really a surprise, is it?
Well, my understanding was when they first came out with it, they said it was going to be a one and done anyways. They're like, no, we've got one story to tell. We're going to tell the story and that's it.
I don't think that, because they left it so open for series two. I mean, the whole second half of the final episode was basically, let's lay down the plot lines for series two.
Yeah. So and no one cared.
And no one cared. Because it's just like, well, series one was garbage, and the things that happened did not make any sense. So why would we wait for series two? And,
right.
You know, it really was, because it
was bad.
The first two episodes were actually quite good, quite entertaining.
Yeah.
But then we got to episode three when they went back to the cave and the fire, and just basically it just went down from there. And it just got more. It had elements that were good. I mean, the fight choreography was great, and I think they made some bold choices in terms of some of the things they did with some of the characters, but ultimately it was yet another Star Wars story where you just look at it and you think, why is this even happening? It's just not interesting.
I want more Star Wars in my life. I do, but I want good Star Wars.
Oh, they're right. So, and I've said this before, they need to look at how great Andor was. And
yeah.
Andor is great because no Jedi, yeah? No saviors, no special people, no links to the wider storytelling that's happened before. Just dump all of that. You've got a whole galaxy. You just can do. You could do a detective noir show as Star Wars. You could do, you know, you could do a smuggling show where they're just smugglers.
Well, but, yeah? You know, it is going to tie into Star Wars because it ties into, what is the movie?
Rogue One. No, obviously Andor. But what I'm talking about is the the way it ties into Rogue One is just that, you know, at the end of the two series, he's going to be at Rogue One. It's not they're not dropping things all the way through that basically lead to Rogue One, apart from the fact that he's, you know, this guy becomes increasingly disenfranchised with the Empire and what it does. Yeah, but what I'm pointing is, you can have that as a goal. You can have a thing where you want to end up in the main Star Wars story with major characters, minor characters, but you don't have to. Well, they don't. These Star Wars shows, they don't breadcrumb it. They kind of, you know, put in great big flaming arrow signs, you know, and it makes the whole universe feel small.
Yeah,
because it's like the whole universe, the whole galaxy in Star Wars revolves around about maybe 25-30 people, apparently, and everything they do relates to everybody else that they know, and the people they know all know each other, and they're all can be tied directly back to the main Star Wars film line, and it's just ridiculous. It's unnecessary.
And I agree.
You could do that, but you know what? Set out something that stands on its own 2 feet, yeah, and then bring that in later on, and you know, you can pull that. I mean, the Mandalorian show, they kind of did that, and then as they, if you think about it, the Mandalorian, the more stuff they've brought into the main Star Wars continuity, the worse it's gotten.
Yeah, the first season is way better, and it had almost nothing to do with the original trilogy.
Yeah, and I remember when it first came out, we were going, this is great, because this is in Star Wars, but it's not Star Wars. It's not, you know, in service of the main plot. And well, now it is, and now it's just like, now it's less than it used to be.
And, you know, the thing is, they keep trying to tie into Star Wars with all these different projects, but they keep trying to tie in to the first 3 films. And it's like, okay, you've got 9 films that you could have played with, but you keep trying to go back to the original because those are the best. So I'm not surprised that it's canceled. I don't really, really care, to be honest.
The problem is I now have so little enthusiasm for virtually every Star Wars project going because I've just been burned so many times now. I mean, it's like the Marvel problem writ large.
Well, let's talk about Marvel right now because they have done, from all reports, a major shift at Marvel Studios. Not just the movies, but the TVs. Now, we already talked about the Kang stuff is gone. It's pretend that, you know, Ant-Man beat Kang and that's the end of it. And they're shifting to Secret Wars and Doom and Fantastic Four is coming, which I'm really looking forward to. So they're getting a better focus on the movies, what people are actually going to want. But that still left the stuff on Disney Plus, which hasn't been great. There was moments in She-Hulk that was good, but most of it was pretty bad. Well, they've got, Daredevil coming out. Agatha All Along is coming out. Up until this point, the Disney shows never had a showrunner. They were picking a director and a writer, and they were kind of shepherding it through, but they would have different directors too, and it was just a mess. And now they're going stunned. To IOM too. That explains why it was kind of shit.
Because these shows were basically being driven by the writers.
Yeah.
The problem with a writer is a writer needs an editor, and a group of writers definitely needs an editor. And it's no wonder these things.
And the editor needs a director or a showrunner that has an overreaching view of what this is going to be.
Yeah, but that's what the showrunner is. The showrunner,
right? That's what I'm saying.
And and they edit the writing to say no, we're not doing that. No, that doesn't fit with.
They edit the editors.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So they never had showrunners. Well, they've gone to showrunners now. Agatha is the first one that has a showrunner. Daredevil, which my understanding is they pretty much scrapped a whole lot of what that was going to be and redid it under a showrunner. So they refilmed a whole bunch of episodes. They did the same thing with the, what's that new? There's a movie coming out, I forget which one now, that they rebooted or they reshot the Captain America one.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, they redid a whole bunch of that to fit more into what they used to do, what made Marvel Marvel, and they're kind of going back to their roots. That gives me a lot of hope. Now, I'm not going to say that I expect everything to be great, because there was some shit movies in the first couple years of Marvel as well. Like, the first Thor movie is not great. It's good, but it's not great. But I think this means we're not going to see a lot of the stuff that people just don't enjoy. And I'm fine with that. Go back to what made them great, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Marvel's problem really is more, it's more than just any of these one things. It's the collection of things. They were doing too much.
Yep.
They were, you know, they
and that's been scaled back.
Yeah, they were obsessed with minor comic book characters and turning them into something, because they did it with Iron Man and they thought that was great. So they started doing these minor characters, but the problem is they didn't really have a plan. So, you know, look at something like Moon Knight. Now, I really enjoyed Moon Knight, but it kind of doesn't make any sense in the wider MCU. And it was, tonally, it was very uneven. And they've also had this other massive, massive problem, which is, how do you explain all this stuff happening? Moon Knight's a good example. I mean, they reverse time.
Right.
In Moon Knight, yeah? And apparently nobody else in the MCU gives a damn. Yeah? You'd think somebody messing with time would be something that might pique the Avengers' attention. You know,
at least Thor would be like, or Doctor Strange would be like, hey.
Doctor Strange, yeah. Hey, somebody's treading in my part of the MCU here. I do the magic stuff. No. It's just like, yeah, whatever. You know.
Well, they also came out and said that they want to get away from homework. And I think that was a big problem, that if you didn't watch this, then you don't know what's going on with that. Because right now, I've seen it, obviously. Cole and Julie have never seen Doctor Strange 2. Yeah. So we started watching it. Now, we break it up over a couple of days, right? And when we ended was when Doctor Strange goes to Wanda and she reveals that she's now the Scarlet Witch and she's a bad guy. And Julie and Cole had never seen WandaVision.
Yeah.
So Julie's first question is, I thought she was a good guy.
Yeah.
So I had to pause it and go, okay, so this is what happened in WandaVision, which was a great series, and they still have no desire to watch it. Cole, because if it's a female lead, he's just not into it. He's a typical teenage boy. The hero has to be a strapping man.
Has he not heard that the secret to enjoying female leads is just watching the hot girls?
Well,
you know,
he likes the hot girls, but he just wants to project himself into the character.
Elizabeth Olsen is not an unattractive woman.
No, she's pretty beautiful. So I explained, though, the kids are not actually real. She conjured them up, and it kind of mentally broke her, and that's where we're picking this up. She wants to recreate. She wants to go to where her children are, which makes her a sympathetic character, but obviously she is going about it wrong, and in her mind, she's the good guy. But so they're like, well, she's still not acting like the Wanda that we saw at the end of the Avengers movies. And
that's the problem.
Yeah.
And
you had to do homework.
Even having watched WandaVision, I still didn't buy any of her motivations.
I agree.
She conjured those kids. So she's obviously got the power to conjure kids. She wants to see the kids again. Conjure them up again. Yeah, find a way to conjure them up safely. She doesn't need to go universe hopping to try and find them. Yeah, and destroy everything at the same time. And why would she do that? Oh, well, by the way, Vision, the love of her life. Well, screw that guy. She's done with him now.
Yeah.
Not only that, then Doctor Strange basically drops the bomb in his movie. Oh yeah, I knew what you were doing down in that town, but I'm not interested in that. It's just like, why not?
Yeah.
Yeah, you had witches fighting. You got a new Vision conjured up. You had a whole load of people being held hostage by dark magic, and it was only down the road from New York, and you just went, yeah, not my bag.
Yeah, meh.
Please.
Wanda's got it.
Yeah.
So, I'm excited, but I'm cautiously excited, because I want more Marvel in my life, too, just like Star Wars. I want these things to happen. I just want them to be good. That's all. Is that asking too much, David?
Yeah. But, well, you know what? The thing is when you and I were growing up, things came in cycles. And the good stuff came in cycles. And the longer they stuck around, the worse they got.
Yeah, Rocky.
You know? Yeah,
Predator.
Exactly. All of that sorts of thing. Now we are in
Lethal
that
Weapon.
Only, yeah, we are in that situation with comic book movies, with sci-fi in general at the moment, to be honest.
Yeah.
Where everything has become, you know, the money is so big, the potential profits are so big, and that means everyone tries to play it safe and just redo what they've done before. And there's no originality. And maybe, actually, you know, Marvel, Disney, Star Wars, maybe they all need to be taken down a peg or two and perhaps rested a bit before they come back. I mean, that is what potentially we could be looking at if they don't. And the problem is the bar has now been set so high. You know, studio executives at Disney, they look at these Marvel movies, and if they don't make over $1 billion straight out the gate, they go, oh, it's a flop.
It's just, well, like, you know, you could ridiculous. Do something somewhat original. Like, here's a prime example. And we kind of hit upon this movie. Neither one of had seen it at the time. Horizon, an American saga. Kevin Costner's backed big movie. He wants to make a whole bunch of these. It's this whole long thing. They filmed Chapter 1 and Chapter 2 at the same time. I watched Chapter 1, though, because it's out. I think it's HBO or one of them. It's so freaking boring.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. There's so many characters. There's so many little plot lines that are trying to eventually tie together. The acting is really good. The writing is good, except it's so boring. It's just like, I don't care. I'm halfway through it, and I'm like, I don't care about any of these characters, and I feel like I've seen all of this in other better movies, including Kevin Costner's own movies. I've seen this before.
Yeah. So here's the thing. So the other day, we're sitting down to dinner, and Liam flicks on the TV, and they're about 20 minutes into Eddie Murphy's The Golden Child. Remember that movie?
Yeah. Unfortunately.
Yeah, it's a terrible, terrible movie. And Charlotte had never seen it before. She didn't have a first clue who Eddie Murphy was. So I explained. I said, when this was made, this guy was box office gold. You know, and I said, the way you see him acting here, with the talking back and the snippy things and not taking anything seriously, the shouting out to get, you know, and to get out of the situation. I said, this was his shtick. And for a few years, it was hugely successful. And I said, you're seeing this sort of movie as when it was kind of starting to tail off. But I said, this is what movies were like in the 80s. And there were things about that you kind of miss, because the plot, such as it was, is very, very simple. It's not complicated. Yeah. You start it right. He's got to go and save the kid. The kid's important. Yeah. There's a guy after the kid. He's got like a mystical sidekick. Right. That's a very simple setup. But you know what? Sometimes that's all you need. Yeah. I'm not saying The Golden Child's a great movie. Yeah. And then obviously he goes through the movie doing his shtick, a series of set pieces, this, that, and the other, you know. Everything that happens is telegraphed by the music.
Sure.
And it's just like, not that The Golden Child is good, but you can see what they were shooting for here. They were shooting for something that was an entertaining movie for a couple of hours. And I think we've lost a lot of that. A lot of movies now, they just don't go for the entertainment value. Everybody's thinking about, you know, well, yeah, we've got a 5-picture deal here. And you know, and nobody goes, let's just make a self-contained fun story. And sometimes those will be really good, and sometimes they won't be really good. But you know what? They live and die on their own merits, and they're not fundamental to a billion-dollar franchise. You know, and again, I don't think anybody expected The Golden Child when they made it to make gangbuster money.
Sure,
they hope for it. No, I think they hope for it. But even the gangbuster money of the 80s was nothing like... I mean, the problem with $1 billion is you're not going to keep doing that over and over again.
No.
Yeah, because it's $1 billion. It's a lot of money, and you've got to get a hell of a lot of bums on seats.
Yeah, you got to make the whole world want to watch your movie.
Exactly. And you can't, you know, you can't do that just like, you know, turning the handle. And I think, unfortunately, the execs at some of these studios just think you can.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, because there's some issues with the video game industry.
Yeah, it's got many of the same problems.
Yeah. So this is something that you put in the show notes that I didn't know anything about. Sony released a game, and it's an online multiplayer, and it's called Concord, and it looks very derivative, which isn't surprising because most video games do now. It looked very derivative, but you had to buy it, and it's online shooting game, right? $40.
It's basically, it looked very similar to Overwatch.
That's what I thought it was when I looked at the pictures.
Yeah, it looked very similar to Overwatch, but here's the problem with this game. First of all, it's been in development for 5 years.
Which is a very long time.
Very long time. Very long time. And, you know, look, I did a bit, while I was on holiday, I did a bit of reading about, I read a couple of those, Blood, Sweat and Pixels, that sort of thing. Yeah. Like, you know, that guy who writes about the process of making video games.
Yeah.
And I understand a lot more about how the studios have got themselves into the situation they're in, where basically the cost of these games, because of the staff you need and the steps you have to go through to bring these games to light, and then the huge crunch at the end trying to deliver them over the line, it's no wonder they cost a fortune. But the problem is the studio system needs to find a way to get away from that, because these games are not sustainable.
No.
Now, with Concord, what appears to have happened is it was published by Sony. Sony clearly realized that this game was not great, and so they just didn't spend any money promoting it.
None.
So, of course.
There was zero promotion of this game, because, I follow video game news. There was nothing about this game anywhere. Nothing.
Yeah, exactly. So it comes out. Hardly anybody buys it. And that's the other problem. You know, it's competing against free-to-play games, and they made it a $40 purchase.
Yeah.
Right? Something that needs basically... you need players in the game on the servers to be able to make it successful. So trying to put a $40 gate on that as well, I don't know what Sony was thinking. But obviously, I think they were thinking, this game's not that great, and it's been in development 5 years and it's cost us however many millions of dollars it's cost us. We need to try and make some scratch back on it. The problem is it dropped so much without a trace that after a week they decided to pull it. So they're turning the servers off, they're going to refund everyone their money, and they're going to write it off. And you just look at this and you just think, this just shows you everything that is wrong.
Imagine you worked on this game for 5 years and then not even 2 weeks later it's done.
Well, the problem is, again, is how do you get to that point? Why do you not pull the plug early and go, this isn't working, we need to cancel this property? Yep. And, you know, reading those books, I read about people who worked on games they were really, really passionate about, and the studio said, you know what, we don't think we can get this right, so we're cancelling the project.
Yeah.
You know, and then they go, or alternatively, they're working on something they're really passionate about, but the next one that's out the door is crunching, and so everybody gets pulled over to that, and the other one gets dropped by the waist.
Well, you got
to
wonder what these video game companies are doing, because, quite honestly, from the hardware perspective, Microsoft's in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
I don't know what their roadmap is going forward, but they could not have made worse decisions over time on the hardware platform.
Well, I think
just the last one was a disaster. They released two consoles at the same time, and one was diskless and underpowered, and the other one was the one they wanted you to buy. Why would you release the other one then?
Well, because they wanted to get a cheaper price. But I had the cheaper one. And you know what? For everyone going, it was underpowered. It was fine. Yeah, the problem
is...
It was fine
if you didn't have the other one that was out there, well, and you have developers going, well, if I'm going to release on the top of the line one, I also have to, according to the contracts, release to the cheaper one. So now I've got to dumb it down. I've got to make it worse. I can't make it as great as I want because I can't take advantage of the full featured master console because I've also got to dumb it down for this one.
So I think the original intention of the 1S and the 1X was the 1S would be targeted at 1080p graphics and the 1X would be the 4K. And I think they expected the studio to basically just produce assets like that and there would be no difference in the gameplay. That's not what the studios opted to do. And that's what's now causing a problem because, of course, they're now saying, look, we want to target just a single console, the better one. We want to compete with the PS5, which is more powerful than both of them. The other problem is they want to cross-platform on the PS5 as well as the Xbox, and the PS5 has a completely different architecture, so it's like doing the game twice.
Yep.
Yeah, the Xbox is not as bad because the Xbox is kind of a PC architecture, so you can port your PC version of the game out of that. But the difficulty is that the current Xbox Series X and S products were designed when video gaming was very different.
Yeah,
and I think the idea that Microsoft had in mind was that these will be our last consoles and we are transitioning to cloud gaming, right? The cloud gaming is not happening. And also, Microsoft have realized, especially having just bought Activision, that they've got a Netflix problem, which is you can't... you can pay, everyone can pay their subscription every month, and you don't bring in as much money as you do by selling a game at $70, right? So they now are painted themselves into a corner where they haven't got new hardware on the way, and their cloud gaming revenue is not big enough to make up the shortfall. Not that the Xbox was ever hugely financially successful, but I think what they were thinking was, well, if we don't have to spend on developing the next console after that one, then we'll start making some money in this area. In the meantime, you've got Sony, who are sticking to the traditional model, but seem to have completely lost their minds in terms of what they think people are prepared to pay.
Wait, you don't want to spend $700 on a slightly more powerful version of what's already out there?
Oh, no, no, don't you understand? It takes the graphics and it uses magic to make them better. That's got to be worth $700.
Mm-hmm.
Is that... You know,
oh, and by the way, if you bought your game on disc, well, screw you. You can't use it on the new machine.
Oh, no. You know, you can pay $70 to get a an add-on drive. But who buys games on discs anymore? Nobody, obviously. All those stores with discs in them are just wasting their time. They're just putting them to landfill every month. Look, everyone is scrambling to move to a new business model, right? Sony thinks they can move to a business model of making a lot of money out of whales by selling them extremely expensive hardware. And don't get me wrong, there are loads and loads of passionate PS5 players who will buy a PS5 Pro in a heartbeat.
Yep.
At $700, because it's like the hot chili thing.
Yep.
I've got to have the best, my eyes can tell, you know, and they'll go out and they'll spend whatever it is on 6K or 8K monitors. But you know what, looking at the presentation, which they spent a massive 11 minutes on announcing that.
I watched it. I couldn't tell the difference on half of it.
No, exactly.
Oh, and it's even, slightly better.
Even where you could see the difference, it was like, you know, like a leaf in the background of a tree. You look sharper. And it's just like, yeah, that's fine when you're looking at a static thing. When the game is moving at 60 frames per second, you can't see any of that.
And besides, is that making the game better?
No.
They lost the plot is the only thing I can come up with. Because... it's not the graphics, and this is, I've been saying this for many years. It's not the graphics, stupid. It's the gameplay. It just is. I'll give you a prime example. You know what I'm playing right now, David, for the 400th time? Batman Lego.
Yeah.
I just felt like playing a quick game. I broke out Batman Lego, started a new game. It's been years and years since I played it, and this is the original one. And it's fun. But it's Lego. The graphics aren't, oh my God, I feel like I'm so immersed in this game because of the graphics. No, it's the gameplay. That's all.
In the same token, the game I'm playing at the moment, I'm trying to finish, after many years of not getting around to it, I'm trying to finish Doom Eternal. And I'm playing Doom Eternal on my Switch Lite. So it's probably the crappiest version of Doom Eternal you can get.
Yeah.
Yeah, lowest graphics, 30 frames per second, limited draw, redraw, and all that sort of thing. It doesn't matter.
Exactly.
The game plays the same.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Well, here's a prime example, David.
Yeah, my Switch Lite will fit in my bag when I'm traveling, else I've got.
Right. What's big in video games right now? Retro. In fact, I posted this thing that this fake retro ring in Italy was just broken up. $50 million worth of counterfeit, you know. Well, they're not counterfeit. They're illegal consoles with a whole bunch of ROMs on them, which you can go to Amazon and buy. We've talked about these in the past. Yeah. They're totally illegal. Now, it's not illegal for us to buy them. It's illegal to them for them to sell them.
I bought a Mayu handheld recently, and it came with a SD card full of ROMs for all sorts of different
systems. Do you think Nintendo or Sony or Activision or Atari got any revenue? Of course not. It's all pirated China
stuff.
What
these guys were doing, actually, you have to admire the chutzpah of these guys. It's quite clever, because what they were doing is they had reproduction Super Nintendo cases made, and they would stick in a cheap board running an emulator inside it. And they would sell it to people who wanted retro-looking games.
Yep.
I mean, it's actually the same thing that Atari have been doing.
Yes.
And Nintendo has done their own version. And, you know, that company I buy the Commodore 64 thing from, the Amiga 500, the Atari 400, they've got Spectrum 1 coming out. Is it basically the same model? It's just that these Chinese guys didn't bother licensing anything. They just went and did it.
Yep.
You know,
stupid.
And $50 million apparently have been making a lot of money.
Yeah.
That's crazy. You know, you do have to wonder. I mean, obviously, yeah, the guys are going to go and bust these rings and all that sort of thing. But actually, you do have to wonder. The sales channels that allowed these guys to sell this stuff are doing nothing about it.
They're culpable as well, 100%.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when you say the sales channel, we're really talking Amazon.
Amazon, eBay to an extent as well. But Amazon definitely, because Amazon just doesn't care.
No, they really don't care. No.
They all take that same attitude, which is, well, we'll put up whatever you want, and then if somebody complains, we'll take it down.
Yep.
Right? Which is just not good enough.
No.
You know, it's just not good enough at all.
Well, let's get into the fun part of our show here, David. Not that this hasn't been fun, but I feel like we've been really negative. So let's go positive a little bit. Let's talk about our bracket. For those who didn't listen to the last episode, and I can't imagine there's a lot of people listening to this one that didn't listen to the last one, we have a bracket. Before, it was always comic booky movies, and we've expanded that to comic booky TV shows as well. So you can have a show going against a movie.
It's not much different.
No. So this week we have Jessica Jones.
We're not going to have War and Peace.
No.
This is Pride and Prejudice.
No. We have Jessica Jones against WandaVision, both Marvel projects. Now, Jessica Jones ran from 2015 through 19. There was 3 seasons, and WandaVision was 1 season. Jessica Jones was on Netflix. This is when Netflix had, you know, the Marvel TV stuff.
This was the gritty... this was where Daredevil... The same people who did Daredevil.
Yeah, same people.
It was barely in the MCU. It kind of had one toe in the MCU.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, Daredevil lived in New York, missed that whole alien invasion thing, but there you go.
And then WandaVision was, I believe, the second Disney Plus series. I think Loki was the first one, and then WandaVision came out. I'll be honest with you, this is a hard one for me. Jessica Jones season 1 is fantastic.
Yeah.
It's just so good. And I believe this was... what's his name? He played Doctor Who.
David Tennant.
Yeah, I think this was his first project after he left Doctor Who.
Yeah, but he's an amazing actor. He was fantastic in this.
And the actress who plays Ritter, who plays Jessica Jones, is a very complex, complete character. She is very flawed, but a lot of her flaws are because of what happened to her, because of... The Purple Man is what, you know, he's the bad guy.
Yeah, this guy has the power of compelling people to do what he wants, and he found her and as a superpower person, used her to do terrible things.
Yeah, and basically enslaved her for like a year.
Yeah, this is her revenge story. The first season, I think, of Jessica Jones is virtually perfect.
Yep.
As a comic book show. I mean, it really, really was. It was interesting, it was compelling, it had depth. Fabulous performances.
And it went downhill in season 2 and 3.
Well, again, this is the problem, is it was so well conceived that first season. It was like, well, what happens next? And it became more and less and less interesting the longer it went on. Because ultimately, the problem with Jessica Jones was that, and it's a problem with the way they presented her in the series. In the comic book, she developed, she changed, she became a different person. She had different things happen to her. In the TV show, she basically remained the same. She went through these seasons of all this terrible, terrible stuff. And
she was still kind of a bitchy drunk.
Yeah, she basically just remained pretty much the same person all the way through.
There was no character development on her.
Constantly fighting against doing the right thing versus can I be bothered to do the right thing.
Which is an interesting character, but there has to be growth.
There has to be growth. And the other thing as well is they start to focus on how she became who she is, and just
it wasn't interesting.
Just superpower origin stories are just nobody cares,
right?
Yeah, it's always it was a MacGuffin. MacGuffin happened, and then you got X set of powers, and that's.
But they never really concentrated on her powers in season 1. It wasn't about her powers. It was about what happened to her and her quest for revenge, really. But also fear of this guy. She was freaking terrified of getting anywhere near him again. And it was interesting.
That's the development we did get in season 1, because she overcame that. And she defeated him at the end because she overcame her crippling fear of him and what he'd made her do. Right? But then season 2, it's just straight back to normal. You know, she's going to meet a guy, she's going to sleep with a guy, the guy's going to have a complicated life, she's going to make his life more complicated. And in the meantime, other stuff will go on around it. It just became dull. And it was a shame because it really deserved better than that, especially when we saw how good that first season could be.
And then you look at WandaVision. I think there was, I'm going to say 6 or 8 episodes. I want to say, yeah. I don't remember. It doesn't matter. WandaVision was, I will say, visionary in that each episode going up towards the end happened in a different time period of television.
A sitcom style.
Sitcom, yeah. Yeah. You know, you had the 50s or the 60s and the 70s, yeah, and the 80s. It was
Ozzie
fun.
And Harriet, yeah. Ozzie and Harriet, I Dream of Jeannie.
It pulled from everywhere. Yeah. And they did it in a way that was both interesting and mysterious, because you wanted to watch the next episode to see what happens, because something overreaching is happening.
The problem is that was fine for the first 4 episodes. The second half of the season was just dire. I mean, it really wasn't great.
I agree.
And we've talked about how
there were some good spots in there, though.
Yeah,
the whole reveal of Agatha was great.
Well, yeah, that was. But again, it didn't make in the universe of the story. It came across towards the end just like, oh, they only did that to give us somebody to fight for a climactic.
Yes.
Yeah, the whole what was going on outside the wall with S.H.I.E.L.D. and all of that sort of thing, boring.
Yep.
You know, that was the stuff that was all tying into the wider MCU.
Right. We got to make the one woman a superhero too, and yeah, somehow exactly. When she goes in there, she develops super. It didn't make a lot of sense.
Which wasn't explained, and then when we saw her again, it still wasn't explained even what her powers really were and why she had them. And then, you know, we'll rope in another Vision. He gets effectively resurrected. His memories get restored to him, and then he's buggered off, and we've never seen him again. So that's kind of odd.
Yeah. Well, I think the show would have been better if it would have been Wanda against Vision.
Yeah.
When he realizes that he is really a construct of her imagination and her mental breakdown of him dying and then creating this fantasy world, and he needs to set it right. That would have been better.
Of course it was. He convinces her that basically, you know, what she's doing is wrong.
Yeah.
And she needs to stop and she needs to make it right. I think that would have been far more interesting than you know, the witch
what we got.
Power
fight
at the end. You know,
big glowy thing in the sky again.
I think that's the problem I have with it is that WandaVision was a bad second half of the season. Jessica Jones was a bad season 2.5 to 3.
So
first half of season 2 was okay, but then it went down as well. But you know what? I would come down on Jessica Jones for this, because I think that first season was virtually perfect.
I agree. I'm with you. I think that Jessica Jones was. It was better. It just was.
Yeah.
So we're going to give it to Jessica Jones. That first season is just, it's an almost perfect season of television.
Yeah.
Now the next one we've got is kind of tricky because you've never seen American Splendor.
No.
And it's going against pretty much 10 years of The Flash.
Yeah. Now I'll put my cards on the table here. I really, really like the CW for The Flash.
I love the first couple seasons, but then it got...
Well, it became very CW, and they all did, you know, so it became far more soap opery. But I actually think that if you look at each season, the way they constructed each season of The Flash, they had an overarching big bad who he was fighting against, you know, and they actually... We talk about character development, yeah? Every single year with The Flash, they developed him and the people around him as characters. Every single year. There was no years where they went, okay, well, you know, we'll just leave that person in the background. They'll just remain the same they were. They all changed. They all changed in ways you couldn't see coming. And they all changed as a result of what was happening to them in the show.
Yep.
And for that, I think The Flash was really an achievement. Because to do that with television writing, on television budget, with what were occasionally some fairly ropey special effects, and... No, the fact that they had to kind of dole out what the Flash did because they couldn't afford to have him to doing his thing all the time. Yeah. And yeah, it had some flaws. You know, the Flash had this really irritating habit of instead of defeating, coming in at a million miles an hour and then defeating his enemy who can't see him coming, he would come in, he would stop and he would look at him and talk to them for a bit before he started trying to defeat him. And you just kind of think, that's the problem with the Flash, is if you can move at 1,000 miles an hour, nobody's ever going to see you coming. You can beat everybody.
Yeah.
Yes. And yet you have to stop and you have to have the thing and you have to, you know, do that thing that they irritatingly do in many superhero movies, which whenever there's any character dialogue going on, they've got to pull their cowl off so you can see their faces.
Yes. Well, so I got to get my actual FaceTime in here.
It had a lot of those flaws in it. And it got a bit complicated during the middle of the seasons because it really embraced the multiverse in a big way. But, it brought in some absolutely classic comic book Flash stories. Towards the end of the seasons, it was doing crossovers with the other shows, so you got Crisis on Infinite Earths and stuff like that. All really ambitious stuff for a TV show, and I think it was a real achievement. I really do. And I've not seen American Splendor, so I can't.
So American Splendor is a 2003 film. It's based on a real person named Harvey Picar, I'm going to say. Yeah, Harvey Picar, played by Paul Giamatti, who, let's be honest, is a brilliant actor. He is so good. Yeah. He's going to be in the new Star Trek series, by the way. Yeah. This guy wrote, Harvey Picar, the real guy, wrote a comic book based on his real life living in New York. And it was a weird comic book. And it really got popular because he got invited to go on The Late Show with David Letterman. And David would make fun of the guy all the time. Yeah. Looking back, it was funny when it was new, you know, back in the early 80s, mid 80s, whatever it was. But looking back in those interviews now, it's like Dave was kind of a dickhead. I mean, he just really kind of made fun of this guy when he didn't need to. Don't punch down.
Dave was always a dickhead to me.
He was. He punched down too often, and that's
his
problem.
That was his shtick. He was like, you know, I'm pretending that I'm the best person in this room, and you know, I'm better than everyone else, and I'm doing this stupid poxy shit on this poxy show. Yeah. That was Letterman's deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't want to get into too much of American Splendor. It's not going to win. So I'm just going to move on. We're going to give it to...
Hang on a minute.
It's not going to win.
It's not going to win.
It's a good movie, but...
As somebody who's seen it, I think you should acknowledge why it's not going to win off the Flash.
It's depressing.
Just for a bit of context.
Right, it's kind of depressing.
Right. While I've not seen this movie, I am familiar with Harvey Picar.
Yeah.
And I think the difficulty I have with however good this movie is, and it got a screenplay Oscar nomination, and obviously I do recognise Paul Giamatti as a bit of an acting genius. To me, I felt the subject matter, interesting as it is, it's like, you know, yeah, he was an interesting guy, and he did something unique, but he didn't really change the world with it.
No.
I mean, you know, the kind of lived as life graphic novel has not taken over the world. And even I know there are a lot more serious graphic novels as literature nowadays, but I'm talking about non-comic book ones. I'm talking about, you know, non-fantasy characters, ones where people just use it as a medium. But even so, he's not exactly set the world on fire.
No,
either did that. I mean, that is a thing that comic book people like, but you know, it's not mainstream.
No,
any stretch of the imagination.
Next so one I, that I, we're gonna yeah. wrap up this. We're gonna do one more. Ms. Marvel 2022, Brie Larson,
yeah.
against X-Men. Ms. Marvel, sorry. This is a TV show. Yep.
Yeah.
So Ms. Marvel against X-Men Days of Future Past. I really liked Ms. Marvel.
Yeah,
I liked the lightheartedness of it. The main actress is she's so good on screen. You just can't help but fall in love with her character and her personality.
She's quite, she's extremely charming.
Yes.
She does play it
very much like in the comic books.
Yeah. And so she comes across quite as an adorable character. And she goes on a very interesting journey in the TV show. I like how it's not you know, it's not a deathly secret that she's got these powers.
And this is the rare TV show that 100% ties into the movies, because she's a huge fan, which honestly didn't make a lot of sense, of Captain Marvel. Because in the movies, who would even know who Captain Marvel is? She doesn't really ever do anything. In the first movie, it's the 90s, right? And in the second movie, she just comes back and helps the Avengers, but she's not on TV or anything.
Bearing in mind that there were no TV cameras in that final film, Thanos. Yeah, it's just like, how did anybody know who was anybody was there?
I mean, I accept that, you know, there was a press conference and she did all the things on Earth before Endgame. I get that. There's a good 5-year gap. But even still, it's just like, you never see that Captain Marvel becomes this iconic superhero. And then all of a sudden we get this series after the blip, and then she's a big hero or big fan of her. But okay, I accept that, fine. But the lightheartedness, even in serious moments of this TV series, is good. But what really makes this is her family. Her family is so fantastic. The actors, the interaction, you really do believe this is a family that love each other.
And not only that, an Asian family. Mm-hmm. You believe that it's that you can...
Not Asian. Well, I guess you can say Pakistan is Asian.
Exactly. They're an Islamic family. And you kind of buy it. And,
100%.
You know, the brother is worrying about getting married, and, you know, the mother is always fussing around and all this sort of thing. The
dad
is
kind of...
I'll tell you what it reminded me of. Have you ever seen that Canadian sitcom Kim's Convenience?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah? Right, so it very much had that kind of vibe.
I agree.
To it. It was very... It's very attractive and pleasurable to watch, because, let's face it, a lot of us don't have great families sometimes. It's nice to watch a nice family.
And I like that, you know, when they introduce her into the movies, that her family comes along for that ride.
Yeah, I was just about to say, the smart thing they did, first of all, of that, the movie, The Marvel, she was by far and away the best thing.
And her family, 100%.
It was very smart to involve her family in it as well, because, really great characters. So it was a great show. I don't know what's going to happen to it now, after what happened to The Marvels, but it was a great show, and it was really, really enjoyable.
X-Men Days of Future Past.
So this is one of those ones at the time it came out, because when the time it came out, X-Men was in trouble as a franchise, really. The movies had steadily gotten worse.
Well, they had already introduced a new class of X-Men that took place in the past, which I think is one of the best superhero movies of X-Men, period. And, of course, it didn't have Wolverine in it, thank God, because at that point he was just way overexposed. But we had a really good X-Men movie, you know. Kevin Bacon played a great bad guy.
Yeah.
We see Professor X and Magneto, and quite honestly, I think I like them at that age and those actors better than... I was just getting tired of the old Magneto and the old Charles, and it was the same shit every single time. First Class was great. It was just great. And so what do they want to do? Well, now we got to tie in the franchises together. We've got to bring Wolverine into it. We've got to, and it's going to be time travel, but it's going to be Wolverine going back into his younger body. And, it was exhausting.
I think I can understand.
I enjoyed it. Don't get me wrong. I did enjoy it.
Yeah. I can understand how on paper they thought that was a really clever idea to kind of, because obviously the challenge you've got is to go back to that time period and then not affect the stuff that's allegedly happened later.
And this is what happened in the comic book, by the way. They did send someone into the past.
Yeah.
Think it was Wolverine. I think it was Kitty Pryde. Yes, it was.
So they use Kitty Pryde to send Wolverine in this, because apparently she's got that power now, which was never in the cinematic universe. But by the by,
well, not with her. She was the conduit, where it was Professor X who did it, but she was the conduit to allow it to happen. It was kind of alluded.
That wasn't really clear,
right?
Because I thought she sent him back, and I thought that was her power, which was nothing like her original power. Which was going through walls and changing gender.
Intangibility. Yeah.
Turned out her gender was intangible as well.
Not funny.
I think it's funny.
No, it wasn't funny.
All right, okay. But I found that this kind of was it was worse than the sum of its parts.
Some really great moments.
Yeah, but by the end of it, you're just like, I just...
The beginning of the film was great. It's post-apocalyptic. The X-Men are running from them for their lives from these Sentinels who are just super powerful. All that was great. You get to see the older Professor X working with Magneto.
Yeah.
It was great. And then parts of him going back in time, Wolverine waking up in bed with a woman, doesn't know anything, and these guys barge in, and you know, there was some really good parts in here, but overall, it felt like a missed opportunity. Days of Future Past is one of the best X-Men stories in the comics. It really is. It's brilliant, and it changed the course of X-Men forever. It really did.
Yeah. But and, this isn't one of their best stories on screen.
So, quite honestly, I've got to give it to Ms. Marvel. I feel like it's sacrilege, but if both are on, I would rather watch Ms. Marvel. I think it was a much better experience.
Mm-hmm.
So our winners this week is Jessica Jones. We should probably nail that down to season one instead of all of them.
Yeah.
The Flash, 10 years of that. And so, look, television won out this week.
Mm.
Yep. Imagine that. So next episode, we're going to have Constantine. That is Keanu Reeves from 2005, which I haven't seen in forever. Against Preacher, one of my favorite comic book series of all time.
Yep.
Preacher is such a good comic book. So they decided to do a television series.
Uh-huh.
We have 2019's Watchmen TV show against 2013's The Wolverine. That'll be interesting because I enjoyed both of those for different reasons.
Exactly, yeah.
So, David, I'll see you in a couple weeks. Next week, we'll see each other and do Tech Fan. Bunch of stuff to talk about, including the new iPhone. I think it's hitting the ground by then. I have not ordered one.
No, I'm not ordering one either.
Julie is two generations behind, so I am thinking about ordering one for her. I'm going to leave it up to her, but I think it's time.
So Leanne is on a 13, I think.
That's what Julie's 13, on.
Yeah, but she's particularly interested because of the camera control.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, Julie uses her camera all the time, so...
Yeah, same for Leanne. So,
yeah, so we'll talk about that on Tech Fan in a week, you know, unless somebody gets sick again or family and, you know, life in general happens. And we don't always get to do these every week. So, David, I will see you hopefully in a week.
See you then.